Luckily, there is one thing all autocrats have in common. Some point after their takeover, they all seem to do this thing where they trip over their own antics, resulting in their fall from power, whether by usurpation, prosecution, or even death. No major autocrat has ever peacefully died with his grip comfortably on power. What do they keep doing wrong? Better yet, what do we learn from that? Angst. NYU professor and award-winning author Ruth Ben-Ghiat documents a peculiar pattern of behaviors in modern strongmen, from Mussolini to Trump. Save a few exceptions, technically like Francisco Bahamonde of Spain, most strongmen dealt with severe anxiety and tried to assuage it in unhealthy ways, usually to their own detriment. You could even call it a predictable process of six stages: rise to power, growth, competition, injury, devolution, and downfall. It always starts off with either an evident or a surprising takeover of power, followed by relative shows of expansion and success. Then the dictator runs into threats to his power, be it law and order or even another dictator, which leads to an overwhelming sense of victimization, self-righteousness, political martyrdom, or persecution, which ultimately drives and exacerbates unhealthy impulses. Such negative behavior patterns cause an emotional and psychological devolution. The same dictator that stole power through judgment and cunning now finds himself making careless or stupid mistakes for relatively meaningless or symbolic victories. And that eventually leads the dictator to his own fall from power. Truly, just look at the history of dictators. None of them could ever seem to get their anxiety under control without letting it cloud their judgment and hence ability to stay in power. Healthy ways of getting anxiety under control involve vulnerability or even empathy, which is a big no-no for authoritarians. I don't say this to suggest dictators are insane in any way, but rather often present traits of mental health disorders like antisocial behavior or psychopathic impulses. Whereas sanity addresses the intelligence quotient and thereby social functionality, mental health actually addresses the emotional quotient, which implies the self-functionality. It is one thing to make yourself present a certain way to other people, but it's another thing entirely to see yourself as you actually are. The emotional quotient scores a person's ability to manage and respond to their own emotional problems. Before you go dissing emotions, let's nail one fact to the floor. Your emotions are processed through your central nervous system. Go ahead, pinch yourself. No, really, try it. Ouch, that hurts. Your central nervous system, or CNS, processes that physical pain. Every fear, weakness, emotional pain, or failure that you feel or experience is actually processed by that same system. With pain being the top motivator of humanity, the central nervous system remains one of the most influential systems in the body. You won't see a doctor until you actually start hurting. The joints can stiffen, but we often only respond immediately to pain. With the central nervous system processing your emotions, no wonder we use physical descriptors to describe emotional events. He broke my heart. They stabbed me in the back. She makes my blood burn. It is the EQ, not the IQ, that is the biggest contributor to life success. This is why you can earn degrees like a thermometer and still do or say stupid things. So if dictators have high IQs but low EQs, that makes a perfect recipe for getting into power easily and not being able to stay there. As long as the dictator doesn't deal with any emotional issues that lead to psychological devolution, that is the only way that they can stay safe. Then again, that rarely ever happens. Means. Now that we understand what strongmen keep doing wrong, let's take a closer look as to why. As when we obtain things by stealing, cheating, or some other illegitimate manner, we tend to be more insecure about what we obtain. If we legitimately win a race, we proudly and confidently showcase our trophy, and afterward we think nothing of it. But if a runner wins the race by cheating, he lives in hypervigilance, because winning isn't the point. Not getting caught is. Likewise, the strongman, having obtained or secured power by illegitimate means, is just a subject to hypervigilance, which is where the angst comes from. Critics calling for his ouster or competitors vying for the same title and power of a strongman is what makes him more concerned about staying in power rather than serving his people. But that is the very thing that creates distance and disillusionment amongst his supporters, because will they rightly feel a sense of betrayal by their strongman selfishness? Per reporting by author Brian Stelter, often supporters of strongmen believe in their lies, quote, until they lie about me. Because strongmen, of course, will eagerly sacrifice their own supporters to stay in power. However, strongmen sometimes know exactly where their angst comes from and why they have it. But it's not enough to simply recognize it. They have to actually deal with it. But by definition, strongmen and repentance simply don't coexist. So their anxiety wins in the end. Now, if strongmen tend to lose support as they focus more on keeping power than serving people, which leads to their downfall from power, perhaps the power isn't actually the goal for strongmen. While power is certainly the main means to an end, it can't be the end itself if strongmen have consistently proven willing to lose power for something they find more fulfilling. Need. I notice that one trait tends to rise and emerge as the strongman's grip on power begins to wane. Cruelty. I believe what strongmen most want power for is not necessarily to be strong, but to be feared. So instead of power being the point, power is actually the means to exercise omnipotent and unstoppable cruelty against perceived and actual threats. Cruelty is an antisocial trait, which can sometimes indicate a lack of empathy or otherwise a narcissistic desire to use empathetic skills for cruel exploitations later. Like anyone's nature, a nature is a need. Therefore, through our personality, we do certain things to keep our nature satisfied. If we don't, that's what makes us feel inadequate or disappointed in ourselves. If we do things that are contrary to our nature, it makes us feel dissatisfied or unfulfilled. Most dictators are, or were documented, to have had harsh and/or abusive upbringings. And therefore, many strongmen had, or have, violent, abusive natures themselves. Cruelty for strongmen, therefore, is more than just a trait. Cruelty is their nature, and therefore their need. A strongman without people who fear him feels empty the way a light-natured person feels without hope. It is the fear of his subjects that makes strongmen feel a sense of satisfaction, and may be their only way to feel relief or any sense of self-esteem. I know this is dark, but what I'm trying to reveal is an Achilles heel in the modern strongman. Cruelty is useless if the reaction to it is courage. Fearless. One thing Ukraine has said since the beginning of Vladimir Putin's invasion is that it is imperative they show strength and no sign of buckling or backing down. From the pinnacles of leadership all the way down to everyday citizens, Ukraine's united response has been one of fearlessness. Even amidst pressure from other countries to simply negotiate a loss of land for the sake of peace, Ukraine knows something other countries may not understand. Ukraine's fearlessness is not necessarily the only way to victory, as much as it is the last barrier to stay Putin's genocidal progression. Unlike other white privileged countries, Ukraine is more familiar with the policy model created by Professor George H. Stanton, known as the 10 Stages of Genocide. We talked about that throughout season 2 of this podcast. The 10 stages of genocide are classism, symbolism, discrimination, dehumanization, organization, polarization, preparation, persecution, extermination, and denial. Ukraine is dealing with the last two stages at once. But with their response of fearlessness, they have actually created something like a psychological stopgap in between the 9th and 10th stages, extermination and denial. What is this stopgap I'm talking about? It's actually not their counter-terrorist efforts to defend their homeland. It's actually the support that Ukraine has garnered from the world. We all may have seen or heard of something called the bystander effect, which is when a large presence of bystanders witness a person in distress or under threat and do nothing about it. Despite the fact that pain is the most powerful motivator in the human experience, the most powerful demotivator of all is fear. And fear generally deceives us into fallaciously thinking that someone else will be the hero when we see someone who needs help. According to a presentation by BBC, many organizations, such as the Hero Construction Company, for instance, have worked for years to foster more heroic traits in everyday average people to help society as a whole overcome the apprehension of the bystander effect. The idea is to get just one person to be more inclined to be a hero in a situation to help a distressed or threatened person. And the heroism will serve as a gateway to quickly overcome the bystander effect, prompting more people to join in and help. What Ukraine did was actually stand up as their own hero by responding with a united front of fearlessness, invoking heroism all over the world. And they quickly and powerfully overcame the global bystander effect in a tremendous way. Of course, NATO had some obligations to provide aid and resources, but it was the attention and support Ukraine garnered from the citizens of other nations around the world. This is like the court of public opinion, except on a global scale. If you recall the analogy I used before of the race runner who cheats to win a trophy, notice that the hypervigilance they feel actually has nothing to do with the trophy nor the other competitor they cheated in order to win. The cheater is actually worried about how the watching audience will turn on him if they ever find out the truth. If Putin is like the cheating runner in that analogy, then the actual winner is kind of like Ukraine, and the judges of the race are the other global leaders. But the watching audience represents the global public opinion. The angst that strongmen feel is not so much because of their victim as much as it is because of the watching audience. And this is what I believe was at the root of Putin's string of stupid mistakes. Underestimating Ukraine's strength was more than a mere miscalculation. That was a complete lapse in judgment, like bringing a plastic spoon to a gunfight. Underestimating Ukraine's level of reception to Putin in the first place was delusional, not a minor error. The lack of modern military strategy, understanding, or even awareness of his own citizens and soldiers' opposition to his invasion are all signs of Putin's slipping grip on power and reality. Ukraine will win because Ukraine got the world to keep their eyes on the real enemy. Not the government, not the immigrants, the dictator, Vladimir Putin. What we can take away from Ukraine's fearlessness is this. Dictators rely on the success of the denial stage of their genocidal efforts. It's like the hypervigilant cheater hoping the watching audience never finds out the truth. Keep your eyes on the actual enemy, America. Watch the dictator. Watch Trump and hold him accountable. Watch Putin and hold him accountable. Watch Netanyahu and hold him accountable. Do not allow them to deny the truth. Genocidal dictators do not get to win the race of freedom in this world. Not as long as we are watching. Elohim Belechit America. Al Hirivato Mekon Lefilastina. Slava Ukraini. God bless America. Freedom belongs to Palestine. Glory to Ukraine. Thank you for joining me if you are new to this podcast, and thank you so much to all returning listeners. This is the last episode of Anti-Season 3, but be sure to check out next week's bonus episode where I discuss more about my dissertation on lawlessness, dictators, and world order. Till next week.